Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and joining me today is...
Just plain old Corey. Just some CTO in front of a microphone, talking with my friends.
Corey has an interesting accent this week.
I don't know where it came from.
Probably just trying to cheer up the mood because we've got a bit of a sad episode today. We're going to start with yet another username and password breach. One of the largest, some saying the largest, breach yet that we have seen. And then we are going to jump straight into a touchy subject, but really an important one, where we'll talk about the effects of the government shutdown on cybersecurity for the U.S. government and companies that rely on U.S. government services. So with that, we can jump into the news. All right, news time.
No, let's talk pop culture.
What, you want to talk more about PewDiePie again?
Darn right. He's my favorite YouTuber, as everyone on the interwebs knows.
Yeah, of course. Instead, we're going to talk about data breaches.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
I think as much as I don't watch PewDiePie, I'd rather talk about him.
Well, you are the one that sent me a PewDiePie video this morning, right?
Apparently, he plays Beat Saber. While it is one of my favorite games, I don't think it redeems him. Uh-oh. Did I just get the bro army after me?
The bro army are going to hack us now.
They're going to hacksaw my Chromecast.
But in real news this week, security researcher Troy Hunt, who we've talked about quite a bit on the show, he runs the Have I Been Pwned website, among other things.
The answer is yes.
Yes. Disclosed a massive data breach that he had found or after being tipped off on the interwebs.
Or maybe more a massive leak of credentials.
Yes.
It could be an aggregate of data breaches.
The breach itself, he's calling Collection One, named after the folder that it was stored in. And he found 2.7 billion rows in this collection, so rows of data. And he noted that it took some cleaning, actually, because a lot of this was just garbage data. Which actually we saw too when we went through that big 1.5 billion password bundle.
1.4 or something like that.
We ended up having to remove like 300 million or so that were just like
maybe
junk.
Even more. I think we ended up with just over 1 billion that were actually seemed to be unique emails.
Yep.
And credentials.
So this one started out at 2.7 billion rows in the collection, came down to 1.6 billion unique emails and passwords. And that being emails treated as case sensitive or insensitive, passwords treated as case sensitive. But this wasn't actually filtered for emails that are valid emails. He noted a lot of them were still like SQL statements from SQL injection or just literally text files as well. So he did some more cleaning. And in the end, this breach still totaled 773 million unique email addresses and 21 million unique unhashed passwords, and quite a few more hashed passwords.
And by unhashed, you mean they're actually clear text passwords.
Yep,
in
correct.
Fact, by the way, the first breach, or not the first breach, we shouldn't be calling it a breach, the first big password leak that mm-hmm. was an aggregate of many different breaches, all of them were clear text passwords, so that was quite notable. This doesn't necessarily have all clear text, which is somewhat good news, but it also could mean they're more current passwords because they haven't been cracked yet.
Yep.
So I've seen a lot of headlines saying this is the biggest password or credential leak ever. One person put it as the biggest credential leak that Have I Pwned has posted at once, which that may be true. But anyways, I would argue that it may not be the biggest because the one we talked about that was on the dark web before, even though it wasn't 1.4 or 1.5 billion, it still seemed to be right around 1.1 of unique. Now, who knows if we did as good a job cleaning as Mr. Hunt, but it was pretty large too. And more importantly, it was all clear text. So everything in that 1 billion list was a readable password.
Yep. And the origins of the dump, there was files in there indicating like where they potentially came from. There wasn't any actual like data necessarily backing it up, but there were file names to point towards different websites that they probably came from. And as I was reading through it, it really was a mixed bag from basically all over the world. Ton of .com websites, ton of Taiwanese websites, Italian websites, French websites. It seemed to hit whole bunch of different hosts, and it seems like some like Black Hat just storing usernames and passwords they've scraped over the last few years probably.
Yep, that sounds about right. And that's, by the way, why I'm getting a little pedantic when we call this a breach, because it really is more a massive collection of data that was harvested from many different data breaches.
There's something like 87 gigabytes worth of usernames and passwords stored in these files.
Yep.
Wow. So, funny enough,
it's a big mega upload.
Yeah, on Mega, which that's what, Kim.com's website?
I'm sure it's totally legit.
Yeah.
No pirated copies of Beat Saber there.
No, of course not. So funny enough, I actually did some more digging, and I found on a hacking forum someone claiming that this was really only just the start. It was collection one of actually six different collections. And they posted download links to the other five collections, totaling over a terabyte worth of data.
Oh, goodness. Well, that kind of makes the collection one name have a little bit of context.
Yep. I mean, to put it in context, collection one was 87.18 gigabytes. Collection two in this is 526 gigabytes.
A little smaller.
No.
Oh, wait, 526 gigabytes.
Larger, yes.
I thought you said megabytes. Whoa.
Yeah. I'm still trying to consider how I'm going to attempt to replicate this, because I am very curious what's in the rest of these. But it'll be interesting to see if Troy Hunt goes after this and downloads them and finds even more data.
There's no doubt. I mean, these leaks are actually what powers his rather useful but ironically sometimes scary site. You know, if you heard Mark mention Have I Been Pwned, you can go there, put in your email address, and it will tell you if your email address is in one of these lists. The ironic and scary part to me is you can also put in your password to see if your current password has been compromised. As much as I know Troy Hunt's legit, and that is really a good site, I cannot do my password. You know, the idea that he could, if he wanted to, be holding on to those drive me nuts. So while it is useful to know if your latest password is in one of these lists, I'll leave it up to you to decide whether or not you're confident enough to do that.
You're not the only one that shares that concern. I actually saw a user on Reddit post a script to just hook in with their API instead, where you can send a hash of your password.
That's much better.
And I remember it was actually like midway through last year, Have I Been Pwned released their big API where you can plug into like the sign up form on your website to test password strength anonymously by submitting basically hashes and partial hashes to
passwords.
See if they have any match in their database.
That's very good. And by the way, that's why I do think he'll definitely follow up with every single collection, because it's what powers his site.
Yep. So more password breaches, more evidence of why you shouldn't reuse passwords. I mean, Troy even noted that he had quite a few accounts in this breach that were a part of it. I remember that 1.4, whatever number we want to give, billion password bundle we had. I probably had like six or seven accounts that were a part of that.
I definitely had my current email address, but a really old crappy password I used a long time in there. My dad was there, though, and the one for him was pretty current. So definitely had to sit down and talk with Mr. Dad.
And it also shows, I mean, if someone gets a hold of your password, you're pretty screwed unless you have things like multi-factor authentication too, right?
Yeah. Or, of course, we always talk about different passwords everywhere. I'd rather be screwed on one site than screwed on all of them. So use a password manager. But multi-factor, to me, is still the ultimate solution. The only unfortunate part is not every single site really supports it yet. Mm-hmm. We have a great product that does help support it, but use it where it's available.
Exactly. And this seems also like a very disturbing trend in more and more username and password breaches, too.
To be honest, and I actually recommend against this, but I have a little apathy for this. I think I've told you before that you're really worried about your password, your email address, your security, your social security. It's all out there. It's been out there forever. The fact that we're just seeing these, but frankly, by the time these leak, the hacker who probably had all these breaches probably got his profit from leveraging this. The fact that it's leaking now probably means it's old, less valuable data to him. So I can't help but not be surprised. It's kind of the state of the union, you know. Why wasn't 1.4 billion or 1 billion enough to convince you that this is happening left and right?
Yeah, and you actually, an example I throw around a lot is with the LinkedIn data breach that happened, 2012, I think?
Yeah.
The hacker in that case before even releasing any of the credentials, used a Dropbox employee's credentials from that breach in order to then breach Dropbox. So you're right that oftentimes by the time they become public, even if it's like for sale as a giant bundle, the original perpetrator has already siphoned off the most usable bits out of it and either used them again or sold them off to someone for even more money.
I mean, really, when they come on the dark web, when anyone can get them, they've lied. It's like a credit card, right? If you find a fresh credit card that has a big balance, that one's probably worth thousands to you. You keep it. But then there's a bunch of credit cards that might have smaller limits and less balances. And that's the one you sell this list of 10,000 of them.
Advice?
Yeah. This is how I've been working on the underground for a long time since the FBI hasn't found me yet. Poop. Uh-oh, I just screwed. Bad OPSEC.
Well done.
Yeah, I mean, once you can publicly get some of the data from these hacks, typically the worst has already been done.
And so if we are running under the assumption that our usernames and passwords and, like, even worse, our social security numbers and everything are all just basically out there, should we be pushing towards changing our usernames and passwords or passwords more often then? Or
I think MFA is the big one, but also a pass. I mean, you and I, you shouldn't know your passwords for 90% of the sites. The only password you should care about, and this is a password that you're still using in combination with other factors using MFA, is the master password to your password manager. And there's tons of programs out there. You know, we can't really get behind one because it's not our business, but there's LastPass, 1Password, KeePass, there's built-in password managers and OSs. All of them will generate a super long gobbledygook password for you that you're never going to remember. In fact, you don't even have to know what it is, and that's what you should do. And then this sort of leak, you know, maybe someone's still going to break into XYZ brand company, and maybe XYZ brand company is so stupid that they don't even hash your password. So now a hacker has one of your 30 character long gobbledygook passwords. Who gives a crap? As soon as you know about that, you tell your program to generate a new one for that. You didn't remember the old one in the first place, and you're good. Meanwhile, if you are using multi-factor on that particular XYZ site, you'll be fine anyways. So I don't know. This story just makes me sad because it didn't really surprise me. Everyone's treating it like big news, but I feel like, how many times have we talked about this? You know, we talked about the 1.4 billion password breach, but really we've talked about tons of other breaches on this podcast that were single company, yes, and maybe smaller numbers. But all this is proof of all kinds of companies having their data stolen on web applications. By the way, one of my passions, and we don't have, at least at WatchGuard, a solution for it yet, but to me, web application security is one of the biggest problems on the internet today. And I'm making a presumption here, but most of the breaches that allow bad guys to steal these hash or password databases are web application flaws. SQL injection being one of the most common to do this, but there are other web application flaws that can still get you access to the back end. And, you know, this fact that there's over 200 companies that have had this happen, often big companies, in this one file, one collection of seven, I think you said, six or seven. You know, you should think about that. Why, in this day and age, when people are like, well, cross-site scripting solved, no one really has that anymore, SQL injection's not a thing. No, it's totally a thing. Why haven't we fixed our web applications? We've known this problem for well over 10 years. You know, get your developers to go to OWASP.org, pay attention to secure coding. You know, this is a big problem, and this is how a lot of this data stealing and exfiltration happens.
Yeah, and like, even just good security code audits are something you should go through. I know there's plenty of organizations out there that run security audits on code just to make sure you haven't slipped up.
Because, absolutely.
I mean, no one's perfect, and even if you are trying to follow like OWASP best practices, you might be like,
you're going to have issues. Yeah. I mean, we think about our web security, and I'm sure we still have issues because we developers are human. You make a good point. And by even if you're a small company, you know, it'd be great if you could hire a professional human auditor. Those are expensive. At the very least, there's a couple $100 programs that will do a basic non-human web scan for you. While they're not going to find everything or be as good as a human, You know, a lot of it, the basic stuff that attackers are exploiting will be found by web scanning applications too.
You could argue this is also a good use for open source, where I feel like a lot of people pitch open source as like the silver bullet of, oh, it's completely audited and you're safe. But in a lot of these larger open source packages, they are audited by security researchers fairly often, just looking for flaws.
Yeah.
And they at least have a better chance of being patched quickly than like you doing your own source code for the exact same thing.
Yeah. And I do think the bigger problem with web application security is, even if you know, when you build a website, say an e-commerce site, you're not building everything from scratch. You're using frameworks, and there will be vulnerabilities in some third-party frameworks. But I'm actually less worried about those, because those do tend to get fixed and come out. But even, you know, every company has pages and code that's 100% unique to them. Mm-hmm. So if you focus on anything, for any frameworks you use on your website, just always keep to make sure they're up to date, but worry about your own code. There's some portion of a page that your web developer might have written, and that might be where you have the problem.
We call that Mark's famous spaghetti code, by the way.
There you go. Although so far we've been lucky. Knock on wood. Yeah. Or we do our badge challenge at Black Hat DEF CON, and we have a website, and we're always a little bit worried about that website.
So far, to my knowledge, we've survived 2 years.
Which is impressive, by the way. Let's expose a website to people that go to DEF CON and see what happens. The fact that we've survived 2 years isn't that bad.
Yeah. Knock on wood, please, again, for the rest of the day. Well, I feel like that was some good advice. Like, multi-factor is obviously the way to go forward. Password managers are even more important now than ever, just with the sheer amount of password breaches that we see all the time.
And finally, for the core problem that's causing all these leaks, it's an industry-wide thing. Web application security is probably something that's going to help these things from leaking in the first place.
Yep. Well, I, for one, am looking forward to the data breach we get to talk about next week.
Yeah.
I'm sure there will be one.
Yeah, we don't even have to guess. That's a prediction we can put every every day.
So for our main section today, we are going to tread the waters very carefully around a polarizing political issue right now.
You mean I can't just blurt out my opinion no matter what?
I feel like this one specifically, we should be more careful than we generally are. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about the government shutdown and, more specifically, its effects on cybersecurity.
That is kind of interesting, right? I mean, a lot of people, you know, there's some things you think like the IRS and maybe the TSA with these shutdowns, but how many people thought it really would affect cybersecurity?
Yeah, and we are right around 4 weeks into it right now with really no end in sight so far.
By the way, was this such a good idea? I'm sure our audience is getting blasted by news about the shutdown every day from every news organization, comedian, YouTuber. Oh, so let's just give them more of this depressing stuff.
Exactly. That was my plan for today, and hopefully it is working out. And I mean, you mentioned that, I mean, the news so far focuses on, you know, like TSA and air traffic controllers and all the individuals that are having to work without pay right now.
Yeah.
Or just furloughed entirely.
And by the way, as much as I'm kind of joking about the popularity of this subject, I'm sure we all know people that are furloughed. It's a pretty serious deal for them. You know, not everyone has an extra amount of savings. So as much as I joke about the subject, you know, I'm definitely not joking to the government workers out there that are finding themselves without pay.
And so beyond just the TSA and ATC, there are actual impacts to cybersecurity as well. Both in the federal space, obviously they are federal agencies, but also for civilians as well. A lot of companies rely on federal programs and organizations for their cybersecurity and at least best practices.
And some we didn't even think about. You know, part of how this subject came up is I think you were just organically going to a site that we sometimes visit and you couldn't reach it.
Yeah, it was super annoying. And that is exactly why we're doing this topic today. So, I mean, first, I guess we should take one quick step back and just talk about what is a government shutdown, at least in the United States. And
I guess we have some international listeners that may not know.
Exactly. I'll go back to my GovPol classes back in school and see if I can remember the most of this. But every year, the U.S. government has to pass a bill to fund itself. Like any organization out there, they can't just run for free. They need money. They obviously take in that money through taxes and other means. And then they pass what's called an appropriations bill, or basically a budget every year to say where the tax income is going to be divvied out to different government departments and agencies and programs. And every once in a while, our government does not quite agree with each other through the different parties we have and comes at an impasse over these bills, and it triggers a partial or complete shutdown of the federal government because they run out of money to spend. They don't have it budgeted.
We haven't passed our budget, so everything stops.
Exactly. And that's exactly what's happened this year. They have failed to pass a appropriations bill for the 2019 fiscal year, which means all non-essential personnel are furloughed right now, and essential personnel are having to work without pay for the federal government. And there are, I mentioned, impacts to cybersecurity because of this government shutdown. And the first one was, you hinted at it, something that I stumbled upon the other day when I was trying to look up a document for basically username and password or password guidelines put out by an organization called NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
They make a lot of great, you know, guideline documents. I think you'll get into why they make them, but there's like how to harden operating systems. There's all kinds of best practices on this site.
Yeah. And they have, like, they're more than just cybersecurity too. They really are just a non-regulatory agency for advancing measurement science standards and technology, but they have a very large presence in cybersecurity. Some of the things they put out are frameworks for best practice guidelines for managing cybersecurity risk. They were actually working on an update for that. As of right now, I think they've got their request for comments on it, requesting people to say like what they think about the current standard that they're trying to redevelop.
But these standards are like mandatory for the government too, right? Like if you're a federal agency that has a cyber presence, they're not just recommendations.
Yeah, if you're a federal agency, you have to follow these NIST frameworks and guidelines. But most civilian organizations follow them as well because they are just genuinely good recommendations.
I mean, if you're a small company or even a mid-sized business, and you know, even if you're a security guy, sometimes you haven't considered a policy for every program or everything. Why try to reinvent the wheel when there's this public great source of information?
Yep.
I've even seen foreign, people from foreign countries and civilians look at NIST guidelines because they really are typically a decent set of good best practices.
Yep. And you mentioned small and medium companies, even large ones, there's a really good chance you have government contracts, which means you're
absolutely
probably required to follow them too.
It probably becomes more mandatory for you.
Yeah. But as part of this government shutdown, around 85% of NIST's staff is currently furloughed, meaning they are not working. So only 15% of their employees are still in the office trying to maintain the most vital systems.
Yeah, they must be having fun.
Yes. And it's very obvious some of the fallout of this when you just go to NIST.gov right now. There's a big yellow banner on the top of the website that says, due to a lapse in government funding, the majority of this website is not being updated until further notice. And they've got other elements all over the site saying, due to the lapse in government funding, most of this website is not available. I stumbled across it when I was trying to look up their documentation for password best practices, and the entire subdomain for hosting their documentation was taken down. It had a big message saying, sorry, due to the lapse of funding, these are not available.
By the way, one thing I'm pro getting furloughed workers back in work. But I was wondering if how much of this was, you know, their commentary on the shutdown versus real, because yes, it's true, 85% of people aren't there, but did they really have to take it down or just not have any sort of break fix result? Meaning, I'm sure it probably took work to take it down versus just letting you get the documents. So
yeah.
I wonder how much is just them kind of making a point.
I mean, it's a valid point at work.
It is a valid point for sure. And we'll get into more serious issues with these security-related workers not being available.
Yeah.
Besides just these convenient and nice documents.
Like I mentioned, that they're working on updates for a lot of their guidelines. Some of the things that do really need to be updated because, as we know, technology changes just about every single year. So a lot of guidelines need to be updated with that. And so by effectively, not really laying off, but furloughing 85% of your employees, those are obviously going to be delayed now.
Yeah. And another thing this organization does, by the way, something we do, is they do a lot of the standards testing for certain products that have to pass certain certifications, especially government certifications. I think an organization called the Computer Security Resource Center, CSRC, they're involved with FIPS testing. Mm-hmm. FIPS 140.2/2 or something.
Sure, CISSP.
Yeah. It's the testing that hardware devices that have any sort of cryptography, especially VPN and other crypto functions, if you want a government agency to be able to use them, they have to go through pretty rigorous testing to make sure the crypto is sufficient. And by rigorous, it's all the way down to making sure the housing of the device doesn't expose any chips so that bad guys physically can't get any information from it. But that's down. And that, by the way, that's less than making a point than if you've lost 85% of your workforce, you don't have people that can do this testing. So that means products out there that might help companies and governments themselves can't get the certification and can't be used in many cases until they do.
And luckily, even though like large portions of NIST are down right now, there's some of the most critical stuff is still up. In fact, I was able to find the document I was looking for on GitHub, actually, because they used GitHub as source control for most of their standards documentation. So that was good. They've left the National Vulnerability Database still
up. That's an important one. I mean, there's a different CVE database, but it's kind of very tied to NVD,
yep.
which is that National Vulnerability Database. So it's really nice to
NTP servers are still up. People that use NTP or time.nist.gov for their NTP servers, which are very accurate, they're still up, which is good.
I'm sure most government tries to, and maybe some organizations to sync time.
I think our firewall is set to go to time.nist. But so NIST is just one organization. There are many more cybersecurity organizations in the federal government, though. One of them is actually only a few months old, and it's the CISA is their acronym. The Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency, which was actually just launched in November, and it replaces something called the National Protection and Programs Directorate. Their main job is to coordinate with private organizations to secure the nation's infrastructure, things like banking and water and energy. And I made a note here, a lot of the stuff that sounds like your fire sale attack prediction.
Yeah. Banking, water, energy, yeah. Critical infrastructure, right? Anything that provides energy and water. But financial, you know, if the banks went out of business, I think we'd have a mutiny immediately.
Places where you really want an extra set of eyes to help guard against cyber attacks.
And where security is really high priority.
Yep. And they've lost around 45% of their employees for furlough. Obviously, a smaller percentage than NIST. But still, almost half of their employees are no longer working there right now until the government reopens. And some of the impacts of this are, I mean, just it's obvious that reduced employee counts means that they're going to have a tougher time responding to any potential attacks. They all obviously have a tougher time updating current systems if any vulnerabilities come out. I think it was a representative from Illinois, Representative Robin Kelly, who stated that it's also affecting their ability to fill vacant roles. Because, I mean, how are you going to convince someone to come work for the government and say, oh, by the way, we're not going to pay you for now?
Or the fact that this just happens at all, even when this finishes, it could affect the way to fill vacant roles because, hey, I just saw people get furloughed for a month. I don't know if I want to take that risk. You know, this is more non-cybersecurity, but there's a big thought that a lot of the TSA agents that are calling in sick and not getting paid or going to work aren't going to be coming back to work after the furlough just because they realize, you know, if I get paid the same at a fast food place, at least I won't be furloughed.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely understandable as much as we joke about that. Yeah. Some of the other things that CISA governs, they're technically the overbody for U.S. CERT, the Computer Emergency Readiness Team, which is, I'd say, one of the larger U.S. cybersecurity organizations.
Well, CERT's really important, by the way. They coordinate a lot of vulnerabilities. We actually work with CERT, sometimes learn about vulnerabilities that may affect our product before they come out. I don't know if you did any research into ICS CERT. There's actually a separate but related body that specifically focuses on industrial control systems. So very probably related to CISA and DHS, but they probably are still reduced staff as well.
Yeah. So US CERT, you mentioned they work with organizations to manage vulnerabilities and disclosure processes. They also do a lot of just good analysis on the ongoing cyber threats that our country and companies are facing. They've published quite a few articles recently on like nation state attacks that we've seen ramping up.
They tend to have good information and new information on nation state attacks, probably because they're related. I do think I've sometimes seen them publish information on, you know, kind of more public-private attacks that usually when that happens, they're a little behind whoever the real researcher was. But they do great analysis. They're a great organization. We really appreciate them.
And you have to imagine, though, that a reduced headcount is going to affect their efforts to analyze ongoing attacks, too. Other areas where cybersecurity is being affected by the shutdown is an interesting one that's been growing worse and worse every single day since the shutdown started. And it is certificate expirations on government websites. So most government websites actually have really short validity periods for their TLS certificates, the things that allow HTTPS encryption to work and authenticate that the website is owned by who they say they are. And as part of the shutdown, they're not renewing their TLS certificates. Nope. So you can go to certain subdomains of like NASA or the Department of Justice
this
or
site's
the
not
FAA.
Secure.
Yeah, and you'll see a big fat certificate warning saying that the certificate's expired and it's not secure. And that there's some actually real concerns with that.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, A, obviously it means man-in-the-middle attacks are easier because you already have a cert warning. Why not just plop in just a completely invalid self-signed cert? The end user won't know. But also, like in my opinion, this is bad because it's conditioning end users to just click around those warnings.
Yeah, to accept it. Oh, this is the furlough. I'll just say yes, but then they might do so again in the future.
Yeah.
When it's not so explainable.
Hopefully not. And in some cases, though, it's actually blocking access entirely. There's a standard called HSTS that we've talked about a few times on the show. HTTP Strict Transport Security.
Huzzah!
Yeah, exactly. Which is basically a set of rules in a browser that says if there's certain violations, do not allow access to this website no matter what. And one of those violations that triggers the block is a invalid certificate.
Even on some subdomain too, right?
Yep, exactly. So there's some Justice Department subdomains right now that you just flat out can't get to because the certificate is expired. And there's obviously other effects too. Like one of the ones that isn't necessarily like cybersecurity related, but I mean, there's real morale costs to a government shutdown too, where imagine if you work for a company, like imagine if I had a counterpart here and we had to go through like a furlough process for something because we're a federal agency and you walk up and you go, Mark, go home, you're non-essential.
But, yeah, how does that make you feel?
Jim, you're essential. You stay here.
Yeah.
Imagine hearing that. So,
and by the way, I'd argue that has cybersecurity ramifications because a lot of these people, you know, it's right now we have a cybersecurity brain drain. It's hard to find good cybersecurity professionals that have experience, especially hard for governments, by the way, which aren't known to pay as much as private industry. So right now, the government is having trouble finding, you know, people that actually have the right experience and ability to work. So if suddenly they're told, oh, you're non-essential, you know, how long are you going to keep those cybersecurity people? So in the long term, it could affect the security of the government if this sort of thing continues to happen.
And as much as you, me, and other security researchers kind of dump on organizations like the NSA or CIA for hoarding zero-day vulnerabilities and stuff.
I don't like that, but I do like them protecting our country.
Exactly. They do have legitimate cybersecurity goals for keeping our country safe from attacks.
They do a good job. I've said before, I actually love the NSA and intelligence officers. I think sometimes the pendulum of power swings too far one way or the other, but they do real important work that I don't want to go away.
And so anything that affects their ability to hire new workers, such as not paying them or not paying their current ones, it's a serious issue for the security of our country and the companies that reside inside of it.
Absolutely.
So that was happy.
Yay.
What
Feel
can we
good
do about
episode
it?
Of the year.
I mean, what exactly can like the average person do about a government shutdown like this? Like, obviously, political pressure is really important.
I think you just need to make your voice heard if you care. You know, we don't want to get into politics, frankly. I don't care what your politics are. But let's say even if you believe in smaller government, you probably don't want to shut down all of the government. You probably just have arguments about what type of government spending is wasteful and what's not wasteful. And when you get to a situation where there's so much disagreement that you're just saying, shut it all down, I would hope no one really wants that. So, you know, make your voice heard. I think we all want this shutdown to be done as quick as possible for the sake of the workers and for the sake of our country.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely on that. And then also, like, you need to remain extra vigilant now for increased cyber activity. Like I joked about fire sale, but with
who knows,
half these government agencies running on skeleton staff, if I were some foreign nation trying to do some sort of cyber attack,
around.
Right now is the time to do it, really.
Yeah.
Because our ability to respond is like hamstrung right now.
Yep.
So even in the civilian space too, especially if you're in a critical position, like anything in like, you know, telecommunications or infrastructure
control,
be extra vigilant for increased activity, because now is the time that they would probably do something rather mean.
Yep.
Anything else you want to throw out there? Maybe we can end on a happy note here. What's a good happy note of what's going on right now?
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I can't really think of anything. Well,
cut
I mean,
this out.
Hopefully
the football players got 300 burgers. That's pretty cool.
And snap back in.
It's definitely what I want when I come to the White House. But only if it's fast food.
Well, my hopes are that by the time this episode airs in a few days, this will all be behind us. And this will be a retrospective look on what happens during a government
shutdown.
That would
be great. That would be the best news. If when we publish this on Monday, people are like, what are you guys talking about, Corey and Mark? Things are great.
I sure hope so. But you know what? It's not looking really good right now. So thanks for listening, guys. We'll have a happier topic for you next week. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any suggestions for future...
Or yell at Google for not allowing ratings.
Yes, or that. If you have any suggestions for future episode topics or questions on today's topic, you can reach out to Corey and I on Twitter. I'm at XORRO underscore. Siri doesn't understand. And Corey is at SecAdept. You could also find the both of us at hashtag the 443 podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.